does that line go again? Baby, you can drive my car. Yes, I'm gonna be a star. A star of Amelia's Weekly Fish Fry. That's right. Brought to you by EEJournal.com. I am Amelia Dalton. And folks, we're putting our pedals to the metal this week with a little help from formal verification. My guest is the one and only Dave Kelf from One Spin. We're talking about random fault verification, systematic verification, and what formal verification can do for you to make your safety critical designs a little bit easier and a whole lot safer. So buckle up, my friends. We're coming in hot. My guest today is Dave Kelp from One Spin Solutions. Hi, Dave. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Hi, Amelia. How are you today?
I am great. So first off, for my audience who may not know, what is One Spin all about?
So OneSpin's a formal verification company, and formal verification is a new technique for the exhaustive verification of designs. The company has produced a whole series of design verification products that work in standard verification flows and accelerate and provide more rigorous verification in those flows. And we've also done a number of specialized solutions as well, one in the FPGA space, one handling System C and more abstract design, and one of them, a fairly recent one, driving into the automotive space and safety critical design, which of course is a major problem and a major significant trend at the moment.
All right, so you guys were announcing at DAC a safety verification solution for automotive and other safety critical applications. So first off, what do you define are safety critical applications, and how does your formal verifications product work with these applications?
So there's a number of market segments that are working on designs that have to be safe, of course. The obvious ones, the automotive space, aeronautical, medical devices, industrial controls, nuclear power stations, and also defense applications, satellites, some of these other applications which have to be very, very reliable, even if they actually don't lead to, you know, a hazard for people. The big one at the moment, of course, is the automotive space. You know, when you're working with cars, it's a very competitive market, and so the automotive manufacturers these days are driving, you know, a lot of new functionality in semiconductors very quickly. So they've come up with this ISO 26262 standard, which defines a whole series of regulations and design protocols and principles which they have to meet, which essentially allow for very, very safe, very, very rigorous verification practices. And you can think of it as being divided into two parts, named as the standard of the systematic verification and random verification. Systematic, you can think of as taking verification as we understand it today and putting it on steroids, if you like, for want of a better expression. So what we're trying to do here, and what you have to prove to the standards organizations in this space, is that the verification you've done of the specification of a design is very, very rigorous. So the specification has to be defined much more carefully, the verification plans based on that equally carefully, and then when you perform the verification function, you have to show that you've actually verified all those different functions. And that's actually, you know, a complex business and requires additional coverage and other techniques to be used to play verification programs up against those specifications, make sure everything's being followed. So that's the systematic part. The random verification part of this relates to the environmental effects that actually affect the operation of a perfectly designed chip. So today you've got a car driving up the autobahn in Germany, say, at a high speed, and some radiation from the sun might strike a chip and actually flip a bit. If that bit happens to be controlling something like the brakes, that could be a real problem. So you have to demonstrate that if faults occur like that in a chip, if errors occur in a chip caused by an environmental effect, that the design can actually eliminate those faults and the chip can continue to work perfectly. What you have to prove is a metric called diagnostic coverage. That is the coverage of the whole design space in terms of the number of faults that can actually, the proportion of faults that can occur in that space. So, for example, ASIL D, that is the highest rated quality design, has to prove that over 99% of all the potential faults in that device will not cause an operational error. So what the companies do is they design in safety handling circuitry. And safety handling circuitry is designed to obviously eradicate any of these faults as they occur. And you have to prove to the committees that these 99% of all these faults won't cause a problem. You do this by using a combination of different techniques. Often companies will use fault simulation. But what we've been able to do is use formal verification to improve this process dramatically. Allow faults to be analyzed exhaustively in a chip and analyze a great large many faults very quickly and rapidly, and help the end users look at, you know, some of the more complex faults and where they're occurring, and demonstrate, you know, that they either won't cause a problem or if they will, figure out where that problem is going to be. So basically, there's two parts to it: improving the systematic verification process, streamlining that process, and making sure that the verification is rigorous and matches the specification, and demonstrating that a very, very high proportion of the faults that naturally occur in a chip won't cause an operational error in that chip.
Okay, so we were talking about safety critical and automotive applications are the most effective use of formal verification. So why do you think that's true?
Well, so there's a number of different verification techniques, of course, out there. But what's great about formal verification, it provides an absolutely exhaustive test of a device. So a formal verification tool basically holds the entire state space of a design. That is every single state the design can get into inside a data structure. And essentially, you ask questions and you say, well, if you're in state A, you know, can you ever see state B or can you ever get to state C? And this corresponds to basically exhaustively verifying that a design can essentially have a certain behavior and that there is just no opportunity for some other behavior to occur, for example, that kind of thing. Now, for automotive, of course, you want to have an exhaustive kind of verification methodology. So if you do have a fault in a design, you want to know there's absolutely no way that fault can cause a problem. If you're doing that in simulation, you have to write a huge test bench, which can test every mechanism from that fault location and how that fault can propagate and then, you know, work within the safety handling circuitry. And there may be many different scenarios to make that happen. With formal verification, all those scenarios are included inside that data structure. So it will just be able to look at the data structure and actually tell you, beyond a shadow of a doubt, there is no way that fault can or cause a problem. Or here are the several different ways it will definitely be a problem. So formal verification is an absolutely ideal technology for automotive because of the rigorous nature of the design. And this is why it makes a great platform for these kind of automotive apps that we've developed.
Let's talk about other trends that you're seeing in the electronics industry. Now, I know for sure that safety critical has been a hot button subject at DAC this year. Anything else at DAC that has surprised you or anything else you're seeing?
Yeah, I would say that, you know, there's almost three axes, if you like. One is this application space. And we've, you know, over the years, we've seen this move to more and more intense applications in terms of the level of verification that's required, you know, from mobile, where power was an issue, you know, through large data centers. And now safety critical, where it's all about high reliability and improving this reliability issue. So there's this trend along the application space that we see all the time. And that's the safety critical technology that we've produced to address. Along the semiconductor and the hardware that the companies are using, you know, we see, of course, you know, more complex semiconductors being discussed and manufacturing issues with those. But we also see, you know, the use of FPGAs increasing on a continuous basis. So we've actually done a lot of work in the FPGA space, and we're trying to meet the trends there as larger devices are produced, rad-hard devices, devices that go into airplanes, which is very common. So again, meeting the safety critical issues, things like that. So FPGA is another big one. And I would say the third one on the methodology axis would be the continuous increase and abstraction and moving to high-level synthesis and the use of System C. So basically produce a System C flow and being able to verify the System C code before you actually run it through high-level synthesis. Again, this is another big factor for us, something we've done a lot of work in. And I think there's a very general trend towards using high-level synthesis and increased methodology. And now we're starting to see convergence between those three. As we mentioned, FPGAs being used in a safety-critical fashion in the aeronautical space to attract the other big standard being discussed, which is DO254 in that space. System C being used for algorithmic work and going on to FPGAs with System C-based designs. So we're seeing convergence between these three critical areas, I think. But it's really is methodology, it's the application space, and I would say the actual semiconductors themselves and different styles of designs. Those are the three axes. We see trends along all three. This has actually been a very exciting DAC for this, I believe.
All right, Dave, it's time for your off-the-cuff question. Now, I know you enjoy playing the keyboards, and you were playing a gig at DAC this year. Tell me more about that.
Oh, yeah, that's funny. So Jim Hogan every year has arranged the Hot Party, as he calls it. And it's a great thing, actually. It's for charity. It's actually for the Gary Smith Endowment. It's a tremendous effort to help underprivileged kids get to college, get a college degree. So it's a great thing. And Jim, of course, has a band. And we all know and love it. And he's got a number of EDA people involved in this thing. And actually, they're all great musicians. So Jim had his band play at this party and did an awesome job. And I was lucky enough to be asked to come up and play a song with him, which we did. And it was great. And, you know, it was fun. And we were all drunk. And hopefully it didn't go too badly. And I hope no one's taken any pictures. Well, I think they have.
Awesome. Well, I think that's all I have time for today. Thank you so much for joining me, Dave.
Yeah, thank you, Amelia. It's great to see you again.
Speaking of electronic design traffic jams, nothing can jam your system up like a lack of memory bandwidth. Sure, DDR4 can be enough for some applications, but for a lot of applications, DDR4 just isn't enough to meet our performance needs. So, have you considered HBM, or high bandwidth memory? It can bring a whole lot more memory bandwidth to those demanding applications. So, maybe you have considered HBM, but you don't know where to start. Well, look no further, my friends. I've got a Chalk Talk just for you. In a recent episode of Chalk Talk entitled Insatiable Bandwidth, Why HBM is Right for You, I sit down with Darren Zacker from Xilinx, and we get into the what, where, how, and why, of course, of HBM. You can check out this episode of Chalk Talk by clicking the link below the player on this week's Fish Frying page on eejournal.com. You can also check out the Chalk Talk section of eejournal.com or head on over to YouTube, keyword eejournal. Hey, have you checked out EE Journal on social media yet? Well, you should. You can find us at facebook.com/EEJournal. If you're into Twitter, you can monitor our tweets at EEJournalTFM. And hey, if LinkedIn is more your thing, well, sure, you can follow us on LinkedIn as well. And we have that YouTube channel I mentioned earlier, keyword EEJournal. It is chock full of all kinds of techie videos, which also includes our very popular Chalk Talk webcast series hosted by yours truly. And also by clicking the links below the player on this week's Fish Fryin' page, you can grab our Fish Fryin' RSS feed or subscribe to Fish Fry via the iTunes Store. And remember, if you want any further information about the stories covered in today's show, just head on over to eejournal.com and look for this week's Fish Fryin' page. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. If you know of any cool new technology, any fun EE conference coming up that I absolutely should attend, or even the best geeky hotspot in your city, I love that stuff, shoot me a line at amelia@eejournal.com or post a comment on our forums on EE Journal. For the week of July 7th, 2017, I'm Amelia Dalton, and you've been fried.